Now back to The People's Show with Seth, Dan, and Randeep on Sportsnet 650.
And they're running out of darts at DOPS. It's Dartboard Justice again.
It's Jack Edwards from Nesson on Brad Marchand getting a three-game suspension for slew-footing Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Such amazing delivery. How could we mistake him for anybody else?
Just throwing darts.
D-O-P-S. Like he forgot how to pronounce or what words make up the actual Department of Player Safety.
Darts at D-O-P-S. It's Dartboard Justice again.
I wanna say that the actual delay between P and S was a lot longer. That's me shortening
you
it.
You shortened it, okay.
I shortened that one.
Oh, why would you do that?
It's like an additional 10 seconds of just nothing.
You know what it reminds me of? Homer Simpson. I am so smart. I am so smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-T. That's what it reminds me of.
Checks out. Checks out. And we got Anson Carter talking about John Garrett. Well, this guy's on the air in Boston. Give me a break.
It was a longer rant from Jack Edwards, but that's about all the airtime he deserves. He actually said Brad Marchand is suspended for an alleged slew foot that no one inside the TD Garden saw. Does he know that alleged means he's accused but not considered guilty yet? He is, like, considered guilty. Yeah. He's already been suspended. It's nothing alleged about it.
He's given up about almost $100,000 in salary because he's suspended. I don't think it's alleged anymore, guys.
Yeah.
Unless there's an appeal I never heard of.
Alleged. How about a replay, you know?
For anyway. A guy that works in TV, he didn't watch the replay? Just ignored it? Oh, man.
Got accused and convicted of a slew foot.
I think he thinks Marchand's going to jail.
Yeah,
he is like a Simpsons character, though, right? Like, he's just somebody that is so over the top. You're just like, you can't be real.
I don't know. Like, part of me hates the Homer broadcaster. Part of me loves the Homer broadcaster. Because I like to hear that every once in a while.
Geriatric line?
Yes. I used to absolutely love it with Hawk Harrelson, Chicago White Sox. Like, why else would you listen to a Chicago White Sox game? But it was freaking hilarious to hear Hawk Harrelson call, like, an opposing team home run compared to, like, a home team home run. Just be like, and it's 2-0 Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Jose Bautista with a home run to left.
The best is, though, when you're watching some of these regional broadcasts, like on NHL Live or something.
Yep.
And like an OT winner, and it's been the game call is just like that. The opposing team scores, and there's like, and there's the goal from Elias Pettersson. Vancouver Canucks win 2-1. Good night.
And that's the game. Kings lose it on an Elias Pettersson goal.
I'm so feeling so bad for Jack Edwards right now because Detroit just scored a goal. Oh, he's going to be choked.
Philip Zadina, looks like. All right, so let's bring in our next guest, Harmon Dayal of The Athletic, joining
us. Well done.
Here on The People Show. They got me working on name pronunciations, Harm.
No, that was really good. That was on point. So impressed.
All right, I try. I do what I can.
It only took a week.
I'm kind of like, people tell me I'm kind of like a parrot, you know? Like, you tell me something enough times, I'll be able to kind of mimic it.
And it's true. Sometimes you never shut up.
I opened the door for that one. All right. So, there's a couple things I want to get to here, Harm. And, you know, I know a lot of the focus with the Canucks has moved off of the ice, but, you know, anytime Elias Pettersson starts to feel like Elias Pettersson again, it's like, ooh, is he figuring it out? Did you see some good things out of Elias Pettersson last night?
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as to say that he's back completely for sure. He's going to have to show it over longer stretch, and I wouldn't say he was back to his dominating old self, but he was at least recognizable in terms of he was drawing penalties, had that patented one-time power play goal, which I believe is the first one he's had this season from that spot as a one-time clapper. He was driving play. The work rate was a lot better. He seemed to be meshing a little bit with Pod Colson there. So to me, those were all kind of signs of his game trending in the right direction. Now, obviously, I think back to the last time I sort of thought similarly was probably probably on the Canucks' first homestand after the win over the Rangers, where he sort of seemed to be connecting play a lot better, especially at even strength. Had an assist at even strength as well that allowed the Canucks to sort of get back into it and come back in that game. And obviously, it was kind of a false start where it was just only one contest. But I think if you do kind of look at the underlying numbers over the last kind of handful of games, he is kind of trending in the right direction in terms of driving play. And his line is creating a lot more scoring chances and shots than they're allowing. So to me, those are sort of encouraging signs. I think the bigger question that I have is, look, Elias Pettersson's too good of a player not to kind of get back on track. The question I have is, what ceiling are we going to kind of see him at? Where even through last season, we had stretches where Pettersson sort of found his game, especially toward the tail end before he was sidelined with injury. But I don't know if even last season we saw the same version of Pettersson that we did in 2019-20, right, in terms of how much of a dominant force he was. So the thing that I'm going to be curious to see is when he inevitably does find his game, what's the ceiling level, like where exactly is it at? And I found it interesting that with, you know, from a coaching staff perspective, it seemed to take, like, the especially towards the end of kind of this, or the middle of this road trip in the Boston game, for the first couple times we saw Pettersson not get a lot of ice time, especially at 5-on-5. And that was a card that Travis Green hasn't really played a whole lot. Last I checked for his season on the whole, Pettersson is almost averaging a full minute more per game than he has in any other season he's played in the NHL so far. So Green has continued to kind of feed him minutes, even though he has struggled so much. And it seems like this is a new button that he's tried to kind of press recently to see if he can get some sort of response. And so far, it seems like, at least in the last game the other night against Montreal, that he is getting some sort of response. So curious to see, not only is he able to sustain it, but where is the ceiling of his game once he does find it.
And the goal was nice. The one-timer is something that I think everybody wanted to see because it reminds you of the Elias Pettersson from a couple of years ago. But the drawing of the two penalties, that was equally important, if not more important, because it implies he's moving his feet. He's a little bit more confident. He's, you know, holding those defenders to, you know, kind of holding them accountable and pushing the pace and the effort. But, you know, that line, Pod Colson, Dowling, Pettersson, you know, there's this idea that, okay, if he plays a couple of games well, do you move him back up? How patient are you with him in the sense that do you want to see him produce on this line before you even think about moving him up? Or do you want to move that, you know, the player up again, playing with some of those higher end players?
I'd like to see something before you kind of move him up a little bit, especially because, again, the Greens tried the approach of continue deploying him in the top six and just keep feeding him minutes, and that hasn't worked, right? And I think at this point, the coaching staff finally got to a point where they were like, okay, if we're not getting the results, something needs to change. And I mean, inevitably, there are only so many cards you have to try and get a player going. And, you know, if that means kind of playing them further down the lineup and having them kind of earn their way back up, that's fine as well. And I'm sure for Pettersson as well, I'm sure he doesn't like the idea of playing as few minutes as he has recently. I'm sure he doesn't like, you know, not having the opportunity to play with Brock Besser or JT Miller. But maybe that's exactly what you need in terms of getting a response out of him and getting some sort of emotion, a little bit of maybe anger to kind of fuel his play a little bit. So to me, I think you're fine just letting him sit where he is at even strength and hoping to see some more flashes at even strength before you're too quick to send him back up the lineup to play alongside the guys who, for most of the season, he hasn't really found chemistry with.
It's it is interesting, you know, to have him in this spot, you know, getting more sheltered minutes, so maybe lighter matchups head-to-head, but also playing with Vasily Podkolzin, who's, you know, really come on as the season's come along here and has really started to round out his game. How have you liked the relationship with Elias and Podkolzin?
Yeah, it's I have liked it. And the reason especially is with Podkolzin, what I admire about his game is a lot of the play away from the puck, how quickly he closes gaps, especially on the forecheck, and the kind of dogged puck pursuit and the work rate. And those are the elements of Pettersson's game that I believe when he's at his best, he demonstrates a lot as well. And when I think of the best version of Elias Pettersson, it's not just what he can do with the puck. It's his relentless pressure on the forecheck as well. I remember looking back at a lot of the goals that the Lotto line scored 2 years ago, one of the dimensions that Pettersson had kind of added to his game was that ability to, as a line, create pressure off a forecheck and create chances down low subsequently. Because in his rookie season, Pettersson had, you know, he's brand new into the league. He has time and space to create off the rush. But obviously, once teams kind of catch on, as they did through the sophomore season, they start to take that away. And that's where he kind of slowed down in the second half of his rookie season. And so Pettersson's adaptation to that was to say, okay, I'm going to find other ways. And for Pettersson, that meant working on the inside and not just being a perimeter player. That meant working hard off the forecheck, being tough to push off pucks, and showing a lot of the traits away from the puck that would allow him to open up and have more opportunities offensively as well. And it sounds so cliche, but I really believe that's an important element of getting him going offensively at 5-on-5. And so I like where the fit is in that sense, where Podkolzin, he obviously has a lot of work to do defensively, but in terms of the forechecking, in terms of the overall work rate, I think those are a lot of the elements that, you know, you want to see out of Pettersson as well. And that's where a lot of times when Pettersson's playing with Brock Besser, they kind of maybe have a tendency to expect things to come a little bit easy this season. And they haven't sort of, they haven't just been able to connect off those same elements, off the forecheck and away from the puck. And so I think that's where I like the potential of what Pettersson and Podkolzin have kind of shown so far.
Harmon, you recently wrote about the top puck-moving defenseman in the NHL, the top 25. Let's focus on the other side of the spectrum. Tucker Poolman, not one of those 25, that's for sure. What we saw yesterday was rough as well. Luke Schenn and Quinn Hughes clearly play better when they're together. What's it about, you know, Schenn that makes him a better option right now than Tucker Poolman in that spot?
It's honestly, I think the crux of the issue is just Schenn and Poolman aren't all that different as players in terms of what their quality level is, and that's a problem given how much Tucker Poolman makes and the contract that they gave him. And really, it's not, I mean, it's one of those things where players obviously have hot and cold stretches, and, you know, this is just one of those stretches where I think Schenn is showing a little bit better. But on the whole, if I just look at the right side of the Canucks' blue line and I had a chance to look at the puck-moving data from last season, you look at the right side defensemen that the Canucks have, you know, Schenn and Poolman and Hamonic especially, you know, all of those guys, and obviously Hamonic hasn't been in the lineup recently, but all of them were among the NHL's worst defensemen in moving the puck. And fundamentally, I think that's what is so hard, is so difficult about this kind of defense core right now, is you're building a sort of back end where one side of the blue line entirely can't move the puck. And I know Myers is definitely better in that respect, although even his sort of puck management can be suspect at times, but it's hard to win in the NHL when you've got a right side that is as inept in transition as Vancouver's is. And with Poolman, I just, what kind of happened, especially in the early going when I watched him with Hughes, was he'd quietly kill a lot of offenses on possessions with, you know, there'd be a low to high pass that comes back to the point, and Poolman is all of a sudden, you know, the puck hops over a stick, or he's trying to walk the line and he loses control of the puck, or, he's walking the line, and he does take a shot, and it's right into the first forward's shin guards, and the puck hops out. Pullman just can't make plays with the puck. Like, it's really that simple, and that really hurts a player like Hughes because he doesn't need an offensive dynamo next to him, but he needs someone who can be a decent passer. I think that's an element that Chris Tanev really had. And when I look at a lot of the Instat data that I had available to me, Tanev rated as one of the league's better passers from the back end. And, you know, Tanev doesn't have a whole lot of offensive flair to him, right? We all know that. He's not a dynamic player by any means, but he's able to connect plays and sort of extend possession times in the offensive zone. Whereas I think Pullman right now, he obviously has issues moving the puck out of his own zone, but he has also has issues in the offensive zone, just being able to make basic plays with the puck. And I think that's why him and Hughes have had kind of difficulties finding strong form so far this season.
Harmon Dial of The Athletic joining us here on the People's Show. We're getting a lot of texts about Brock and how, you know, why hasn't he been demoted? I think there's a lot baked into Brock's preseason injury that may still be lingering with him. I know he's admitted that to Drance a little bit, but what are you seeing in Brock's game right now that is just so different from what he was last year as this Canucks top player?
Yeah, it's been a fascinating one, and I agree it kind of has flown under the radar because of Pettersson's own struggles. I think to a certain extent, we've seen him make a lot of puck management mistakes this season where he has been a little bit careless. And I do think sort of a lot of some of the details away from the puck haven't been as consistent, right? Where, you know, there have been a couple goals against this season where he hasn't been moving his feet enough on the back check. And I think, again, sort of similar to Pettersson, he does need to kind of drill down on those two-way details a little bit for him, for the other parts of his game to kind of round into form as well. I think part of it is the injury element. If you look at a lot of his kind of underlying numbers, he has been kind of suffering from a lot of bad puck luck as well. So it's a combination of a lot of factors at play. The other thing too is, for as much as Besser kind of had success on his own last season, I do see Besser as the kind of player who is not going to be the play driver for a line, right? And he needs, I think, someone on his line who's going to be able to sort of drive the bus in transition and draw defenders and create space. And those are, I think, a lot of the elements that Pettersson usually brings to the table. And it's why Pettersson and Besser, when they usually play together, historically anyway, obviously not this season, historically they've been greater than the sum of their parts together. And with Pettersson kind of struggling, I think that's hampered Besser as well. And I think it's a two-way street there, where Besser's struggles have also kind of affected Pettersson. And so it's just tough right now. And I do think part of it becomes sort of a mental equation as well, the longer, you know, this losing season goes on, where I think at a certain point, guys become demotivated. And I'm not saying that, I think the work rate is there. You know, I'm not questioning the effort, but a lot of times subconsciously, when the Canucks are losing as many games as they have right now, you sort of lose a little bit of belief and a little bit of faith in your team and even as an individual, your ability to kind of bounce back against adversity. And, you know, I do wonder if that's part of it, right? Where, you know, when things aren't going your way, it feels, especially at the team level, it feels like it's, you know, that much harder of a hill to kind of climb up of. And it's just tough right now. And I do think that obviously for the Canucks to have it, you know, any semblance of, you know, competency at 5-on-5 for the remainder of the season, it really does come down to Besser. It really does come down to Pettersson. But you know, as much as you kind of want and expect those guys to get back on track, it fortunately does seem like it's gone to a point where it's going to be a little bit too late.
We were talking earlier about, you know, the new GM of the Vancouver Canucks. What would the first move be for that person, as we assume we are heading down that road? And, you know, the names Brock, Bo, and Miller came up quite a bit because, you know, of their contract statuses all being, you know, at least easier to question what their long-term futures are here in Vancouver. I know you wrote recently about JT Miller and whether or not that's a player the Canucks should tie themselves to long-term, him being a year and a half away from unrestricted free agency. I think the big part of this is, what would his value be at the deadline where it's pretty much an all but guarantee the Canucks will be a seller come that time?
Yeah, and that's where the Canucks have to make a decision on what the sort of what direction they want to go in. And that's why it's so important for them, I think, to sort out this management situation from a big picture perspective as quickly as possible, because you want your organization to have time to plan to make these big decisions. Because when you do look, and that's why they're so closely linked with each other, when you look at Miller and when you look at Horvat and when you look at Besser, these are guys that, you know, and especially I think as it pertains to Miller and Horvat, especially because of those guys' UFA status and how much older they are. If you aren't going to be competitive, if you kind of look at the situation as a new GM or a new president of hockey operations comes in, and they look at the Canucks from a big picture perspective, and they say, we're not going to be close enough to take advantage of Miller and Horvat, and we don't even know if Miller wants to be here, well, then you have to pivot in that direction quickly. And when you do look at potentially moving a piece like Miller at the deadline, he's going to have a lot of value, especially if you are potentially willing to retain some salary, because here's a player that he's so versatile, right? He can play wing, he can play center, he can play on any of your top three lines, shifting up and down the lineup. He can play on the power play, even strength, PK. He's, you know, last I checked, he had logged the most minutes of any player, any forward in the league, not named Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl. And obviously you don't want a JT Miller to be playing that many minutes, but that sort of trust level shows the kind of value that he has for an NHL lineup. And the other element too is, you know, he can win faceoffs and he brings bite, he brings physicality. And for as many imperfections as there has, you know, has been in terms of his puck management and some of the emotional outbursts, he's the sort of player where I think when you look at his sort of situation of him having to play so many minutes and him having to kind of single-handedly drag the offense with Pettersson and Besser struggling, you know, that's not the sort of environment where you're going to get the best version of Miller. And I think prospective teams would probably be aware of that and just looking at his minutes and looking at the situation around him. And, you know, I at least would recognize that when you put him in a better position to succeed, that even a lot of these, for instance, puck management mistakes, he'd be able to simplify his game and not have to try and do as much as he has been so far. So, you know, a piece like that, you know, at a minimum, I'd think, especially when you look at the allure of potentially having two cup runs, which is something that if you remember, Tampa sort of prioritized as well, where they want to be able to, if teams are a lot of times, and this is for example, what Toronto did with Jake Muzzin when they initially acquired him, I think a lot of teams have sort of looked at potential pieces to acquire at the deadline and been like, well, if we're going to spend so much, we'd prefer to have a guy that we at least have multiple chances with, mm-hmm. as opposed to a rental where you only have one shot at it. And I think that's what would make Miller really, really valuable as a high-end top six piece that can sort of play anywhere in your lineup in all situations. I mean, that would bring back, a pretty hefty haul for the Canucks. And again, that's why the ownership group needs to make a decisive decision, I think, sooner rather than later, so the organization can plan to make these sorts of decisions.
Harm, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you.
Thanks.
There is Harman Dayal of The Athletic. As one texter pointed out on the Dunbar Lumber text line, don't forget to mention Elias Pettersson's generous donation. Yes, today it was announced that Pettersson made a $50,000 donation to the Canucks for Kids Fund as part of Giving Tuesday. So Pettersson's still trying to do some work in the community during his slow start to the season.
Yeah, good on the young man to put pen to paper to make sure that support, that charity, which is so important for everybody in this community, does a lot of great work throughout the community, is supported. So salute to Elias Pettersson. I know there's a lot of debate and talk about his play this year, but one thing's for sure, he loves his community, as we've seen, and he loves supporting a great cause. So shouts to Elias on that. All debates aside for a second,
yeah,
let's give him a props on that.
100%. Nice job by Elias Pettersson on that front. Axel Schuster, Whitecap CEO, joins us next on Sportsnet 650.
This is the People's Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Here's Dan, Sat, and Randeep.
A little bit of breaking news. 5 games for Brendan Lemieux. The bite on Brady Tkachuk.
A little surprised.
Yeah.
I thought he'd get
more
closer to 10.
Yep.
Biting is not something that's really approved of.
Especially in today's day and age.
Yeah, come on. Brendan Lemieux is not exactly the cleanest of players to begin with. That's why you thought maybe he'd get a little bit closer to 10.
Of the bite, suspensions, it will never match the Luis Suarez bite.
So he got 13 matches or something of that nature, didn't he?
He was banned for 4 months and 9 international matches for biting Giorgio Chiellini at the 2014 World Cup. So that's what we're talking about. Bites, Brendan Lemieux biting Brady Tkachuk gets him 5 games.
Okay, Suarez had actually bitten before that, though.
Yes.
In the Dutch league.
He bit...
He was a repeat offender.
Yes.
In biting.
He was a multiple bite offender. He was...
2 chomps.
Branislav Ivanovic against Chelsea. I remember that bite pretty well.
In the Dutch league once?
Yeah.
He likes to bite.
All right. Enough of that. So 5 games for Brendan Lemieux biting Brady Tkachuk. The Department of Player Safety just handing that out. Joining us now on the People's Show, he is CEO and sporting director of your Vancouver Whitecaps. It's Axel Schuster. Thanks for this, Axel. How are you?
Hey, I'm very fine. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic. Thanks for making the time for us today. You announced the deal with Vanni Sartini, 2 years, extending him after the great finish to the season. I have to ask, though, was the deal consummated over espresso or grappa?
Over a very good Italian dinner that had both of it and a lot of more things.
Okay. All okay. Right. I like that. And we also
classy.
Saw recently as well, Vanni cooks a mean lasagna as well in a recent TV segment. So good for that. Congratulations on the new deal. But want to talk about the manager a little bit. It was something, unbelievable that we witnessed here in Vancouver, where the team just bought into his message. And you could see that everybody was pulling in the same direction. Sticking with Vanni, when you take into this season into consideration, why was it important to get this deal done ASAP?
First of all, it was important to get it done because we are already in the planning and in the mood of 2022. So it took us one day, 24 hours to get over the Kansas game. And since that, we are really planning next season. So it's important to have a head coach because also actual players and potential new players, they want to know who is the head coach, and they want to speak with him about their perspective. So this is important because we have a busy off season. The off season is not that long, and we want to prepare for next season because, as I always say, next season we want to do this next step. We don't want to continue to do what we have done. We want to do better. We want to challenge everyone and to do a next step.
Well, of course, results are ultimately what decide this. But, sometimes we can see results that maybe aren't for real. You're overcoming your process, but still getting results. What makes you think what we saw with this team under Sartini that you think can continue going into next year and even go a step further?
Yeah, it hasn't been only the result. And that the change on the head coach position was also made at the point where the results were still going into the right direction. So I 100% agree. The convincing part is that we had a strong search mask, and we have looked at a lot of candidates. I have also spoken with a few, and there were a few things that were non-discussable for us, and they were very important for our organization. And it's making players better, making a team better, giving a team a structure, improving young talent, because we want to continue to have a very young team. Our team has, again, been one of the youngest in the league. So all of that are important factors. And I think over 14 plus one games, this is a long period. It's almost half a season. You could see the impact of many to the structure of the team, to implement things that makes the team better. But also, you could see how Wenny has improved individuals and how he has worked with them. And you could see that as well. And I think that are two very important points for us moving forward.
I think what captured most people and everybody could see while watching the squad through the second half of the season was just the spirit and the belief. And it just it felt fun around the Whitecaps for the first time in a while, Axel.
Yeah, it was fun also to be part of it, and I was very honored. And it was interesting because we had the off-season exit meetings, and we were sitting down with every player at least for 30 minutes. And I have spoken with guys that said, hey, it wasn't my best season. I'm a little bit disappointed because I didn't get to the minutes that I hoped for. It wasn't the big step for me. But I want to say it was the best group I was ever in my career. And that has been guys that are at the second half of their career already. So it was something special, and it gives a lot of responsibility to us because we want to move on. We want to do the next step. We want to change a few things, and you have to be very careful because you can also think make things worse. So we have to be very careful with changes and be very strict with who do we let into this group.
Well, Axel, you mentioned about that next step. You talk about player acquisition as well, you know, having that manager in place and making preparation for that next step. The search for a designated player is always topic of discussion in every single MLS market. How do you prepare and how is that search going? What do you want to be focusing on when you're looking for a special player?
The special player has to be a special player on and off the pitch. So I think we have shown last season that we better wait a moment and get the right one at the end, because Ryan Gold, for example, is a perfect example, because he is not only on the pitch a player that helps us to lift and to become a better team. He's the same in the locker room, and he's a role model. And I had the conversation with, for example, our U17 coach, who shows players, attacking midfielders in their team, clips of Ryan Gold and say, hey, that's the bar. If he is up for doing that also hard job against the ball and that putting in that commitment, then there's no excuse you are not doing it. So it's important with having and building a culture and creating culture that is also the driver for all the success, that everyone who's coming in, especially the designated players, are the first ones who are living that in the locker room and on the pitch.
It's it is very important, and also, you know, the fit and style of play. Who is the type of player that you think would fit next to Ryan Gold? We saw some great things with him and Brian White, but if you look for a DP in an attacking position, what type of player are you looking that can work with Ryan Gold?
We're not looking for a DP in the attacking position. It's not our first priority. I think for now we have two very good new players coming, because for us, Caio, that was unluckily injured for most part of the season, and Pedro Rita, who couldn't join the team earlier than the off season, will be two wonderful additions, and both are youth initiative players where we paid a lot of dollars for. So two players that will help us to do the next step and help us to grow. And then we are really carefully thinking about what's exactly the need. But first of all, we have also spoken with all our players. And of course, we also respect that not every player at the end of the day is happy about his personal situation. And we want to find solutions that makes everyone happy at the end. So if a player thinks for him the next step is outside of organization because he wasn't that important part with meaningful minutes this season, then we will react to it. But it's not that we see primarily something has to happen in our offense, because with Ryan Gold and Brian White, we have two players that have been top in the league, and we need additions to that. And we have to think carefully what the right addition is next to Pedro Rita, Daiba Casedo, who will also play a better season next year because he's growing and it's the second season. Christian Dahomer, who scored 12 goals also this season. So we have a lot of good guys there.
When you talk about figuring out futures for some of those players, maybe that fit wasn't there this past year. I want to focus on Lucas Cavallini. What's the future for him in Vancouver?
Yeah, I first, really, and it's important for me to say that Lucas has played an important role this season, although he had a very unlucky season because he wasn't there in the preseason because he was with the national team in camp with the national team and played qualification games. And later midseason, he also had to go and went for the Gold Cup to represent Canada there. And he came back injured, and he got injured again. His important role was that he gave so much positive to the group, although it wasn't a very good season for him. And he was unlucky this season because he then lost his spot to Brian White. And if your DP is okay, not okay, he wanted to play, but is staying humbled and pushing the group and putting in a lot of positive energy, although he's on the bench and only getting a few minutes, that's also a great message to everyone else in the group to say, hey, if he's not complaining and if he stays positive, then I cannot complain and I have to do the same. So I don't see him having another unlucky season like that. But of course, we're also speaking with him as we speak with every other player that has had not the best season to find out what he's thinking and what those players are thinking. And if they think this is the right place or not, and then after we have finished all those conversations, we will move forward. But very important to come back to that is that we have a head coach announced, because all those players, of course, wanted to know first who is the head coach next year.
Yeah, you have that leader in place. You did mention a couple of minutes ago that the attacking area would not be where you focus with your designated player. What area will you be targeting for that designation then?
Yeah, you can ask me again and again. Sorry, I will not share today. I can tell you that the scouting and recruitment department with Nikos Oberhoil is working on solutions for every part of the pitch. We also have to find out if Bruno Caspar is coming back, or we will definitely not use the buy option yet. But it's another player that played an important role in the last games of Vinny Sattini in the 14 games. So we also have, as I said, first to really finish the conversations with the players and with their agents and me, and to look what is the best solution for everyone. And after that, we will react to it. That doesn't mean that we are not already in targeting players and speaking with players. We are preparing, but we are not yet there to say that's definitely the area we need a player. As I said, we think we have a very good group. In the second half of the season, we have been the second best team in the Western Conference. So you better are careful in touching that group, because, as I said, you can make things also worse. So so we will do our decisions at the right time, and we will think very careful about what is the right addition.
Axel Schuster, Whitecap CEO and sporting director, our guest here on the People Show. I think back to prior to your time with the club, but the end of 2017, and it was a very positive year for the club. They had a playoff win over San Jose, end up losing to Seattle. But then the offseason came, and there was a lot of turnover, and it felt like it halted momentum in 2018. Turned out to be a poor season for the club. It sounds to me, Axel, like your vision is we have the core pieces here. We just need to build on it. Is that how you see this roster?
Yes, that's exactly how I see it. I also see it the way that every addition and every player that comes has to give us some as an add-on. We want every player and every staff member and everyone who we sign to this organization being an upgrade and helping us to do the next step and to become a better team or to be have a better group together that fits better for all the needs that we have. So yes, I always said maybe we do a few things a little bit slower, but therefore we want to do them in a sustainable way. And that's the thing that I'm very convinced of. The position where we ended and the performance we showed over 14 games, that is the basis to start into the next season. And I don't expect a setback. But I rather prefer to do a small other step forward than to do a risky step forward that maybe can lead also to a setback.
Axel, before we let you go, is there an update on the ongoing investigations with the club?
Yeah, the investigations have started. And as I said, it's an investigation on the club, not together with the club or not for the club. So right now we do everything, and that's where I stand for. We do everything to provide the investigation with everything they asked us for or they need. That's a lot of documents, a lot of questions we have got asked. So we are working on that and have started with that. It's not in our hands. So for us, our only job right now is to do whatever the investigation is asking us to do. And also for that, there is not more that I can update about because, as I said, we are not part of the investigation. We are only here to do what the investigation asks us to do.
Very well. Thanks so much for your time today, Axel, and all the best moving forward. Enjoy the off season, and hopefully we'll be talking again soon.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
There is Axel Schuster, Whitecap CEO and sporting director.
Really enjoyed that conversation, and we tried to get more information out of him. He would not budge on potential signings, because that's what's exciting about any off season, but especially in soccer, because you have such a wide net that you can cast. You know, there's players all across the planet, but you heard it, that Axel Schuster and the Whitecaps will not be looking for an attacking player. Also, Lucas Cavallini.
Yeah.
What's going to happen there?
He was kind about the season that Lucas Cavallini had, laid out some of the reasoning behind why he didn't perform the best on the pitch. But I do think, you know, there is enough out there to understand that maybe the future is not with the Vancouver Whitecaps. But of course, he did not. He was not committal to that either. So they're going to play it out and see where any offers come from in the off season. If not, I think there is a real chance he could remain with the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Something to watch there, and he's got a pretty hefty salary as well.
Yeah.
But pretty positive discussion with the Whitecaps. They bring back their manager, who was pretty much the Ted Lasso of last year.
Yep.
A lot of good vibes there. We got some text. Mackenzie in Langley. Axel is awesome. Wish we had somebody this level-headed and player-focused in the Canucks management group. Another text. I think the Canucks could use some actual Schuster. Their actuals could use some shoosting.
Axel, you know, he has brought a very measured approach. And you like that. Axels could use some shoosting. It's an interesting.
I like the creativity, though.
I appreciate it. A for effort on the text from the unsigned texter. Nothing. Off the field, there's been a lot with the Whitecaps. And it has really damaged its reputation with the fan base. I think we all understand that. And we hope some justice comes out of the ongoing investigations, should that be what is found. But on the field, it really shocked me the way they kind of tore the team down after 2017. You know, you have a budding Alphonso Davies, you have a good-looking young roster, and they just overturned like half of it felt like. And I understand some of that is just natural MLS player movement that you can't really avoid, but a lot of it was on the club. And they go into 2018, you know it's going to be your final year with Alphonso Davies, you have essentially one of the best players in the league on your roster, and you don't put enough around him to make the most of that season, it felt like such a lost opportunity. And that's where you really felt a lack of ambition. I felt a lack of ambition from this ownership group, and it has been downhill ever since. This has been the first time there's been positive vibes around this club since then. And that's a long time. We're talking 3 years. So I think it's very important to hear Axel say, we have the core here. We just need to make some subtle tweaks, make sure we don't ruin the vibe we have within our group, and move forward with that.
And the key word there is ambition, because I remember going to matches back in the day when you mentioned 2017, 2018, and a common discussion point amongst fans in the BC Place, and having season tickets at the time, I'd chat with a lot of folks, was ambition, man. I spend my money on season tickets. Why isn't the club matching that? Why isn't the club providing consistency? And now you're having a situation where you feel like it's slowly coming around. Is it perfect? No. But at least, you know, with Axel Schuster, you have the, hey, we're not going to let this slide. We're not going to let the good vibes that they've built up just kind of evaporate.
Yeah.
And you got to act on it. You got to continue to spend. But they did last year. And the Ryan Gaul move was a big one because they spent money in a big way. They kind of smashed through their ceiling, their spending ceiling. So can you continue to do that? And there feels like there is some positive, you know, energy towards this club on the pitch. And you're right. Off the pitch, you know, the investigation, there's still a long way to go to repair the relationship with the fans on that front. And, you know, we'll have to wait and see what happens on that front because, yeah, you do have some executives that are on leave right now. And that is something that we're going to watch and we're going to make sure that we update all fans on that. But what Axel Schuster can control right now, what Vanni Sartini can control right now, is the on-field product.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a step in the right direction. That is something to be proud of if you're a Whitecaps fan because, man, it's been dark the last couple of years.
Yeah, and I think there's a real opportunity here. We've said this in the past, but with the way the Canucks are, they're not going to be in the playoffs. Real chance for the Whitecaps to capture a casual fan's eye with a good offseason and some hype going into the start of next season. All right, it's time for the People's Trivia. Your chance to win a pair of tickets to the Canucks and Penguins December 4th at Rogers Arena. 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Answer this question there. All correct answers go into the randomizer. Raja Shergill pulls out one, and that lucky winner will be off with lower bowl seats to the Canucks and Penguins Saturday at Rogers Arena. Randeep, our question today.
Well, we all know that the Canucks are in the bustling metropolis of Ottawa right now. So here's the question. The Canucks acquired Sammy Salo from the Senators in a one-for-one deal back in 2002. Which player did they trade away in that deal?
Answer it. 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. And you might be headed to the Canucks and Penguins Saturday night. Here's Josh with the CertainTeed Pro of the Week winner.
And now for all you renovation pros, we are announcing the final results of the CertainTeed Pro of the Week contest. And that person is Stan Brown. Congratulations, Stan. You've been selected as a potential winner of a $500 gift card courtesy of CertainTeed Pro Materials. You will be contacted soon. Be sure to check back often at proalltheway.ca for the next edition of CertainTeed's Pro of the Week contest. We'll be doing it again right here on the People Show.
All right, up next, Mark Schofield, NFL talk, more Canucks on Sportsnet 650.